You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Alexandra Styron, the youngest daughter of the celebrated novelist William Styron, grew up around literary and arts royalty like Norman Mailer, Kurt Vonnegut, and Leonard Bernstein. Her father became famous with novels like Sophie's Choice and The Confessions of Nat Turner, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1968. But there were also long stretches when he published only infrequently. In Reading My Father, a memoir, Alexandra Styron discusses her father's work, his domestic and professional life, and the experience of growing up in a household where your father is a cultural icon. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased it has brought Alexandra Styron to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
How old were you when you first read one of your father's works?
Well, I was well into my late teens, early 20s, before I read any of his books straight through. I had an aborted attempt at reading Sophie's Choice, which came out when I was 12, and I picked up The Galleys and tried to read it, and I was so horrified by the sex scenes, I put it down and didn't pick it up again for 20 years.
Well, is it difficult to read adult literature because it often deals with sexual matters, or was it that your father had written those scenes?
Oh, well, I think it was both. So 12 is a tender age to be reading incredibly graphic and frank, even funny, but nevertheless pretty bold sex scenes. And then add on top of it the idea that it came sprung from the head of your own father, and I think any 12-year-old would probably throw the book across the room.
But he might have given you a different book and said, well, read this one.
I don't think my father would have necessarily chosen Sophie's Choice as my introduction to his work, but he didn't stop me either. I think I remember picking up The Galleys and him sort of shrugging his shoulders saying, sure, have at it.
And there was no way you could have known that that book was going to become such a sensation.
No, although the word out on the street about the book as it was about to come out was quite good.
You say that discussions about your father's work were prohibited around the house. Did you have any idea about his importance in the literary world when you were growing up?
Well, discussion about his work, his place in the world certainly wasn't prohibited. He would have promoted that. But discussion, any kind of questioning about what he was currently working on was prohibited. He was an incredibly private man about his work, and which I understand. I sort of feel the same way. I hate it when people ask me what I'm writing, and I don't like to talk about it when I come home. That was what was prohibited.
But your mother's also a writer. Mm-hmm. They didn't discuss writing over the dinner table?
Oh, well, we didn't eat with them. The kids ate early and the grown-ups ate late, but I would overhear them talking. My parents did. They had a kind of ritual of eating together late in the evening and talking about work and politics and life.
And then there were all those people who came to the house. I mentioned Leonard Bernstein, Norman Mailer, Ted Kennedy, Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
you tell the story of an incident with Frank Sinatra in the shower.
He was in the shower. I was outside it. There was a spot. There was a window in my childhood bedroom on Martha's Vineyard that looked out over the outdoor shower. And a friend of mine and I, when we were about seven, watched Frank Sinatra take a shower and laughed uproariously, not really because he was Frank Sinatra, but because he was a naked man and we were little girls.
But that wasn't a sex scene that upset you?
No, that was hilarious.
Were you aware of the importance of some of these other people who were just coming to dinner?
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes I knew who they were. Certainly musicians and movie stars I was familiar with. Writers I knew. I think I was smart enough to glean that there were a lot of very important people who did things I didn't understand. There were a lot of people who were... My mother was very active in human rights, and so there were often, sort of Russian dissidents and Latin American novelists, et cetera.
Was that a reason that the kids ate separately? Because that sounds very old world to me. It sounds like Proust talking about how he had practically nothing to do with his mother until she came in to tuck him into bed.
Well, it was sort of true. I mean, our house was chaotic, and I have three much older siblings, so... We were probably all together more at the dinner table and places like that. But because I'm much younger, I sort of had a separate kind of only childhood. And my parents were very much on with their lives. And my father slept late and ate late and worked late and didn't want to be disturbed. So it was a very separate life in many ways.
Well, you write about being injured as an infant, and you were found by your siblings. Your father was upstairs and didn't have a clue?
Well, it was a sort of infamous family story that when I was about 9 months old, my mother left me with my siblings who were two of my three siblings who were, I think, probably 8 and 10, and she went out to do some errands, and my siblings forgot they were babysitting me, and I went down the basement stairs in a walker and landed on my head. And when they finally remembered they were babysitting me and found me, it was quite frightening, and I had a huge sort of lump on my head and needed to go to the hospital, but my parents waited. My siblings waited until my mother got home, and I found out when I was much older that my father actually was home and had been upstairs napping the whole time. They were terrified to wake him up.
My guest is Alexandra Styron. She's written a book called Reading My Father. This is your second book?
Yes.
The first one was a work of fiction?
Yes.
Had you wanted to write about your father all along, or did you have to wait until he died? Or
I didn't really have any thought of writing about my father. I think much of my life probably was the last thing I would think I would end up doing. But there was a point during my father's last years, he had a really kind of protracted and agonizing march to the grave. He suffered from depression for many, many years.
Which he wrote about in his best-selling book.
Yeah, he wrote about in this slim volume called Darkness Visible, which was about his first major bout of clinical depression at when he was 60 in 1985. And then it recurred, but it wasn't something he talked about or wrote about. And there was a point during his last years where I thought, you know, people maybe need to know what happened to Bill Styron. I thought it was a more fascinating story than any fiction I could concoct.
And you were a witness to it all?
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming you also had to do a lot of research on your own father, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, Googling your father after he dies. I did do a lot of that, and I spent a great deal of time at Duke University in his archives, where it's his alma mater.
You said that there wasn't much talk about the work. What about the literary scene in general? Did he talk about how he saw himself in comparison to the other big writers of the time?
No. I mean, you know, my father was, he had a kind of arrogance that anybody who had his kind of success had, but he also was a charmingly humble man. I don't think he walked around, I doubt many of his peers did, thinking, where do I stack up in the pantheon?
Oh, Norman Mailer wrote about that continually.
Well, Norman Mailer's an exception.
And they were compared.
Yeah. But I think for most of my father's friends, one of the things that was sort of delightful about looking through all my father's letters at Duke was to see what a remarkable friend he was. And this sort of ongoing correspondence with all these other equally extraordinary writers. And they were so incredibly supportive of each other. They kind of bucked each other up when they were going through a bad patch. They helped each other out through writer's block. They made jokes when each of them got bad reviews, and they really admired one another. So I think it was a more cohesive and happy club than a divisive one.
And that club could have been called the Big Male Writer, the post-World War II Big Male Writer, with people like Norman Mailer, Saul Bellow, James Jones, John Updike. Your father's first book, Lie Down in Darkness, was an instant success, mm-hmm. and he was grouped with those people.
Yes, yes.
Do you think that was a problem because then he had to write the great American novel, whatever the heck that was?
Well, I suppose it put a lot of pressure on him to perform well in his sophomore effort and thereafter. But I think that was always my father's goal, and I think that was both a blessing and a curse. I think my father, unlike some of his peers who were much more prolific, my father wasn't content to write a book that was just good or about a more modest subject. He was really only interested in sort of the great subjects. And if he couldn't make that happen, that was when he had trouble.
Do you think that he wrote Sophie's Choice as a way to distinguish himself from the others? Because I can't imagine those other writers writing a book from a woman's point of view.
I think Similarly to the Confessions of Nat Turner, I think he didn't necessarily set himself up to do something highly unusual, but I think he found that that was the best and most interesting way to tell another side of the story.
Although he was criticized roundly for writing about Nat Turner from a black man's point of view.
Absolutely.
Today, that probably would not be an issue.
I think it would be less of an issue, certainly. He wrote The Confessions of Nat Turner came out in 1967, so obviously it was the height of the civil rights movement, and he was kind of asking for it. And he also took a lot of heat for making Sophie Catholic and not Jewish. So he took risks, but I don't think he took them for the sake of taking risks. I think he took them to explore aspects of our sort of human story that haven't been explored in a way that he thought they needed to be.
Lie Down in Darkness was written when he was just 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then a slew of books followed fairly quickly,
mm-hmm.
some more successful than others. I thought they were all pretty good.
Yeah.
But then Sophie's Choice comes out in 1979, and that's the last novel he completes.
That's right.
All because of the Depression?
Well, I think it's a combination of forces, and that is sort of the subject that I kind of felt like I wanted to get my hooks into with my book, is to understand the arc of his career, the arc of this artist's career. He happens to be my father, but I think it's a subject that any biographer would have been thrilled to find themselves looking at for the first time. And I think
the others were just not ignored when they fell down the stairs.
Exactly. I have that special perspective. I think he suffered from depression, from sort of incipient depression for most of his life, which he self-medicated with alcohol for many years. And then when alcohol was taken out of the mix, when he approached 60, it sort of changed his chemical balance. And I think that had a lot to do with why he couldn't write another great novel. But it was also because he was sort of hammering at a subject, which was a war novel, which he very much wanted to write. And it just didn't come together with the kind of degree of greatness that he wanted. And I think it drove him mad.
Well, he'd written about war before.
He'd written about aspects of war before, but he hadn't written this story. He was very interested in this sort of subtle combination of both patriotism and revulsion that he felt about being having served, and he served in the Marines in the Korean War and in World War II. And I think he was very conflicted about the sense of purpose and passion that being a soldier gave him with his own principled aversion to violence and to war.
So he kept on working on this book, like Ralph Ellison worked on his infamous book, but kept on rejecting it,
yeah,
or felt it wasn't good enough?
Yeah, I think similarly. I think maybe the difference between my father and Ellison is that my father came at the novel. He started it at several different points in his life, and he wrote novels in between. He started it before Sophie's Choice, put it aside to write Sophie's Choice, picked it up again, put it aside to write a couple of other things, picked it up again.
You published All the Finest Girls in 2002. He was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Was he encouraging and supportive of your desire to become a writer?
He was encouraging and supportive of my desire to be a writer, and I think also, interestingly, in a bad place when my first novel came out, he was again suffering from depression, and he was not as interested or enthusiastic about the book as I would have hoped, and it very much hurt my feelings. And it wasn't until I started writing this book that I began to understand that for him, I think it was more about the idea that I was writing and producing, and that he was finding that he no longer could, that made it hard for him to be generous.
But the children of famous people, actors whose parents are actors, writers whose parents were writers, always have artists whose parents were artists, always have to fight the ghost of their famous parents.
Sure. Yeah.
The only solution, of course, is to become a better writer than they were.
Yeah. Well, I think I decided a long time ago that probably wasn't going to happen, which would free me up to write the way I wanted to write.
There's a wonderful photograph on the cover of your father sitting on the hearth of a fireplace with you sitting on the couch. He's obviously expounding on something. Do you remember what he was talking about?
I don't. The photograph was taken by Jill Kremenz, Kurt Vonnegut's then widow. And she had come to take his photograph for, I'm not sure what, I can't remember. But I think he was getting his picture taken by Jill and chatting with her. And I had woken up and come down and insinuated myself on the situation because I had a bit of the ham in me.
Reading My Father by Alexandra Styron is published by Scribner. And I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
There's another novel in the works?
There is half a novel on my desk, which I put aside to
write this book about the war.
I'm not going to attempt the war novel yet.
Thank you so much for being
with
us.
Thank you so much.